Well, it's good for us to be together today. It's my pleasure to introduce to you our preacher. Bishop Robert C. Morgan has come to be with us. Bishop Morgan is a native of Birmingham, served churches in this northern part of the state, was at Epworth in Huntsville for a while there. He was elected to be a bishop of the church. And he went to Mississippi and served there 8 years, and then to Kentucky and served there. In that role, he had oversight of 1,200 churches in one and 1,300 in another, and that many pastors and churches. And all of those conferences made great strides under his leadership. He was elected to be president of the Council of Bishops in 2000. That's the closest as Methodists get to a pope. He was president of all the bishops for that time. They didn't do always what he said, but we have a personal tie. We were in each other's weddings. He officiated at the wedding of Jill and myself, and I was a ring bearer at his and Martha's wing. He is my mother's baby brother, my uncle. And so he is at Birmingham Southern now in his semi-retirement. He's bishop in residence. We have more students now at Birmingham Southern who are considering ministry in all kinds of forms and understanding their vocations in terms of Christian vocations. And he's one of the reasons. He spends countless hours counseling with students, and he and Martha feed them in their house, which is a pretty good way to get students to come around. Taking a group to Greece and Turkey to study the footsteps of Paul. He takes students to the Middle East, to Israel, and then to England to study Methodist origins. And all his classes sell out at Birmingham Southern, and have to turn people away. We're so glad you're here. If you'll come and share the good news with us.
Is this on? Boom. Well, it's good to see you. I can almost see you. It's a real privilege to be here, to be with Mike and Jill and Sky and Claire. Mike's like a son, really. I mean, you use that loosely. And his daughters are like my granddaughters. And so we feel like we're at home here. We've looked forward to being here. I remember Hazel Green from a long time ago when I was at Epworth. Our first appointment really after seminary was to come to Epworth, and we were there when they moved the church and down on Andrew Jackson way out to where it is located now. And that was quite a chore for just coming out of seminary. But it's good to be back here on this special day. There's so many things that I would want to say informally. I feel sort of at home. This morning I saw Jeff Havens. He and I went to seminary together. And Kim, she was one of my students. She was in here a minute ago. She was one of my students in the course of study. So I feel real much at home here. I want to, you know, thank the music. You know, I go around, and it's amazing what they call praise bands. Some people think if you've got a set of drums and a guitar, that's all it takes. But these folks are good. Now, you're very, very blessed here with this. Craig does a grand job and makes worship. You know, when I think about it, a lot of people get uptight. So, you know, as Methodists, we come from different points of view. You know, you have a... And there's room for that. I love traditional worship. I mean, tell you, I love a Bach fugue and a prelude. But I love this as well. And I think Charles and John Wesley did as well. We often laugh about it and kind of wonder, but what Charles Wesley did, many of the hymns we sing, of course, hymns are the words, but they use the tunes from the old pubs and the bar rooms, really, and because people could sing them. And they like it. It's a new generation. There's a whole generation of people out there in Hazel Green right now, people who are unchurched. Some of them have never been in the church. And Holy, Holy, Holy is a new hymn for them. Our firm a foundation. And so you have to be willing to open many doors so people can come in. Today is a special day in the sense that today is Consecration Sunday, the day when we come and bring our estimated gifts so the church can plan. Some people get uptight. I don't believe you do. But some people get uptight anytime the word money. I'll never forget my first appointment. A fellow named Kermit Little met me and took me around the community. He said, "Now, Brother Morgan," and I was about 21, 22 years old as a student, and he said, "Brother Morgan," said, "you'll do real well here, but you don't mention money in this church." They get upset. Well, you know, the way I felt about that, I want to say, well, do you mention prayer? Is it all right for me to talk about Christian service? Is it all right for me to talk about Christian? Why is it that money is the thing that hangs us up? And we don't want to hear about that. Well, you know, it shouldn't hang us up. And probably if it's hanging you up, it's because you need to do more praying about it. Because you have not opened up enough. You can't outgive God. And that's where we began here. Paul constantly talked about it, the apostle. I don't know exactly the portion of Paul's writings, but I would say one out of about 10 verses, he's talking somewhere, passages, about the importance of being generous. That being a Christian and being generous they go together. And Jesus did the same thing. I teach a course, and Skye had the course on parables. And it's amazing that one-third to one-half of the parables are about how we handle our possessions, our gifts that God's given us. And Jesus told parables around that, and that we are to be good stewards. So if it's important to Jesus, if it's important to Paul, it ought to be important to us. And again, I see it seriously. It's as important as prayer in your life and everything else. There's not one that weighs heavier than all the sacraments. It is a sacramental thing. And so I want to talk to you about some foundations we have, of course, in Scripture on this. And I think one of my favorite passages from Paul is a theme that you've taken for your weeks of study of stewardship. And it's found in the 8th chapter of 2 Corinthians. If you have your New Testament, you might want to turn. That's a little high, isn't it? But listen to this. This is in the second letter of Paul to the Corinthian church. It's actually about his fourth or fifth letter. But it comes here. This is the last thing that he writes to the Corinthians. It's a love letter. And he's sort of saying, these are things I want you to hang on to. And he was telling them about something that happened up in Macedonia, which is the northern part of Greece. And this is the poorer section of Greece in those days, Thessalonica and Philippi and Berea and those places, where Corinth and Athens were very wealthy people. Listen, it's sort of, you know, really putting the twist on them here. He said, and now, brothers, we want you to know about the grace that God has given to the Macedonian churches. For out of the most severe trial, they had an earthquake, really, in there. Out of the most serious, severe trial, their overflowing of joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. He said, for I testify that they gave as much as they could give, and even beyond their abilities. Entirely on their own, however, they urgently pleaded with us that they may have the privilege of sharing with the service of the saints. And they did something else. First of all, they gave themselves to the Lord and then to us in keeping with God's will. They first of all gave themselves to the Lord. And it goes together. When we surrender our lives to God, we give our lives to the Lord, that's what we mean, then we should become generous. I mean, it's not a you should be. I have another nephew who has a saying, you don't got to, you get to. to do these. You get to be generous and how important that is in our lives to be generous. Robert Goodridge was a great bishop in the church, and he used to say the two most important things that he did for a person in ministering to them was first to lead them to Christ, to love Christ, to surrender themselves to God. And then the second most important thing he did was to lead them to live a generous life. That's not just in your gifts you lay on the altar in terms of money, but your life, your talents, your time, and all that. He said to teach them to be a generous person. Generosity and Christian living, you know, go hand in hand. How important it is to do that. I shared with the earlier congregation this morning about one of my favorite authors, Stephen Covey. I bet many of you have read some of his books. He wrote the book about 7 Habits for Effective Living and Leadership and Family Living, a lot of things. But he wrote another little book you may have read or may not. It's called Putting First Things First. And he was talking about prioritizing things. What's the most important thing in your life? And, you know, how would you answer those things? And he said, that's critical in your life. And he said, the theme you should live by is that the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. And that's the main thing. And how important it is to know what that main thing is in your life. What is the purpose? What is first and foremost? And Paul said that these Christians in Corinth, first of all, above everything else, they love to worship, they love to sing, they love the creeds that were developing in the church, they love to testify, but they love to give. And it goes hand in hand with Christians. Paul taught, and of course Jesus before him taught, that this is the way those who are believers should live. They should recognize that first of all, they are receivers, and everything they have, everything that Bob has, was a gift from God. And Paul asked the question, what do you have that didn't come from God? And that's where we begin. We are receivers. And they went on to teach that you're not only receivers, but you're receivers for the purpose of being good stewards with what you've received. To be good managers is a word we would be, caretakers. And Paul and Jesus both were talking about this in terms of the fact that we need to be careful. We need to live more simple lives than we live. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we got a bonus or an increase in salary? Rather than figure out what kind of car I'm going to buy, is to figure how can I share this with the kingdom. That somehow that becomes a priority in our life. We're first of all receivers. And then we are managers of what we receive. For what purpose? And that is to, again, I go back to Jesus. All of those parables, the parables of the talent, all these, even the 10 virgins, talking about being a good steward with the oil that they had, that they might, all of them are about stewardship. Receive, manage, for the purpose of giving it away, distributing. We're receivers, we are managers, we are distributors. And the way we distribute that is according to God's will in our lives. How important it is. I remember Camp Sumatonga, and I hope your young people go there. I grew up there. And I remember we used to, in those days, we ate at tables, and we ate boarding house style. And there was somebody from each table that was designated to be the server of that table. And they would go up to the counter, and they'd get plates of beans and bread and meat and all these things, and they would bring it back and share it with everybody at the table. On Sundays, they always had fried chicken, and Mrs. Hutto's fried chicken was best. And I often would say, I want to take this plate of fried chicken, and I want to go over in the corner, and I want to eat all of it just about. You know, I had that kind of feeling. Well, that's the way we look at life. We're given these things for the purpose is to go back into the world and to share what we have. We're receivers. We're managers. We are distributors. I would ask you now to sort of look at your giving life. I'm not talking about how much or what or how often. Just examine your own way of giving. What's your attitude towards that? I think most of us start out as we give, I call it scriptural giving. We give because the book says you're supposed to give. Many people tithe because the book says you're supposed to tithe. Now, I'm not selling short what the book says. I believe in what the book says. But it needs to get beyond the legalism of doing this because you're supposed to do it. It needs to become a way of life. We usually start out there, and I dare say if you look in your life, you started out at some script. I'm putting this off in there because God expects me to do that. That's all right. But hopefully you can grow into a second level of giving, which I call spiritual giving. And that is giving because your heart leads you to do it. You want to do it. You know, it's a part. You want to pray. You want to be in worship and sing. You want to give. You know, that's spiritual giving, very important. There's a third level of giving, and that's called sacrificial giving. Sacrificial, where we do without something. Now, again, we give generously. We've always done. We've been always tithe and give more than a tithe in our life. In fact, my CPA fusses at me because we give too much. And I want to say, give me a break. You're not the one that guides me in how we do this. Examine in your own heart, you know, how you you do this. Scriptural giving is the way most of us start out because we're supposed to, then we move hopefully to more of a spiritual giving and where we give because we just want to. You can never give enough. Sacrificial giving is when you do without. And again, regardless of what we've given, we've never given enough. We've never done without something in order to give. And it's very important that Jesus taught us to deny ourselves some things. I've heard as a bishop and I've heard as a superintendent, pastor, well, I don't want to make a lot. I just want to make something where my children never have to want for anything. Well, I agree. Wanting for food and wanting for shelter, that's very important. But I want my children, I have a different attitude. There's some things you might want to want that you don't get. But we live in a society and a culture where you get whatever you want, you know. The little card, plastic card, will help you do that. But there's a fourth level of giving that I wish that we could understand in our lives that goes beyond scriptural giving and spiritual giving and sacrificial giving. And that is what I call sacramental giving. Now, sacramental, a sacrament, in our Anglican Methodist tradition, the word sacrament means an outward and a visible sign of an inward grace. In other words, the sacrament of baptism is the outward sign of water, the living water, God in our lives, the Spirit in our lives. That's what it's in our heart, it symbolizes that. The communion, we take a little wafer and we take a cup of in one hand and we take to remember the body and the blood of Christ, outward signs. The offering ought to be sacramental. When we outwardly place on the altar a gift, that's an outward sign of what our love for God is. Someone said a good thing to do when the offering plate is passed is a little couplet to recite to yourself. In spite of what I say and do, Lord, this is what I think of you when you put your offering in. And it ought to represent what you think of God in all of His abundance. Hopefully we can all reach that point, I would call it, of sacramental giving. Opens us up to new venues and happiness. I've known a number of people who have learned to give sacramentally. And usually they are the people who have the least means. Again, I shared with the early congregation about a very special family over in the mountains of eastern Kentucky. We had the Redbird Conference there, which is the Appalachian Conference, and I was the privilege to be their bishop as well. They have a great annual conference. The annual conference is about this big, Mike. It was not many more than there. But there's a lot of, it was like the old conferences used to be. It was a real conferring together. They have a memorial service, and they memorialized a list called every person's name, lay and clergy in the conference who had died, and they had special a word, testimony, a witness for those persons. On one occasion, this woman had moved out of the mountains and now was in Louisville and came back to give us her memorial of her mother. Her mother was widowed during the Second World War when she and her sister were just little children. And they didn't have anything. The people in the mountains don't have very much, really, even now. And said they were Methodists, and they went to the church, and they're getting ready for Lent. And they said, now we're going to take up a special missionary offering for Lent. It's every day, put something aside, like you may do the same thing. And they went home, and they said, what can we do? We don't have anything. And the mother said, well, let's work out how we can do it. How can we come up with something that we can make a gift? The mother said she could take in, she took in washing and ironing to make a living. And she said, I can take in a couple more loads of washing and maybe another set of more ironing. The girls thought about things they could make. They made those little pot holders. And they'd go down on Saturday in Hazard, Kentucky, and sell them on the corner for a nickel or a dime apiece. 7 weeks passed, and day before Easter, they counted it, and they had $79. And they were so thrilled, they had a few cents. And so the next morning, they put that offering in the plate with everybody else for the offering. And that afternoon, and what they were going to do, they were going to give it to a family in the community that deserved it because of their poverty and need. And so that afternoon, the pastor and the treasurer and a steward, a layman, came to their house. And they said, you know, we had this Lenten offering. Not having any idea what anybody gave. We had this Lenten offering, and we had a very generous gift here. We received $112, of which they had given $79. And we voted, and we devoted that your family was the poorest family and the most needy family in the community, and we've come to bring you this gift. Well, the girls just bristled, you know. And the mama said, yeah, fine. And she accepted it. And they left, and they just let it go. You know, they could not believe. They were so humiliated. And the mother said, that's all right. We'll find some way. We won't use this for ourselves, that's for sure. And God will show us the way. Oh, several weeks, months maybe passed. And a missionary from Liberia came to the charge up in the mountains, six churches, and said they were building a new orphanage. And they needed gifts from the churches in America. And I know you're a very poor church. You don't have very much wealth. There's no wealthy people in your churches. But we would like to raise $100 from the six churches. And they eyed each other. And they said, and tonight at the service, if you'd bring your gifts. And so they agreed, this is where it's going to go. So that night they put their $112 in the offering. And they went on with the service, preached. And at the end of the sermon, the treasurer came in and said, I want to announce to you. And the missionary said, you know, I say this was not a wealthy church. There must be somebody wealthy because you've made a gift of $124 to missions. And of which they had given $112 of it. But the lady, in giving the tribute to her mother, said, you know, I learned something then that stayed with me all my life. That the matter of being wealthy has nothing to do with what you have, your possessions. You're wealthy when you learn to give it away. Wealth comes not from getting, but wealth comes from giving. From those standards, she said, we were the richest family in all the world. And she said, it has stayed with me to understand the beauty of every gift God has given to us. I guess what your pastor longs for, and I long for it, for you, is that every time we make a gift, it represents that generosity that God has shared with us that we might now share with others. And we've come to the place here in this service where you will have an opportunity to put your estimate of giving for the next year so that they can plan their visits of missions and administer all the things that you do if we place our gifts on the altar. I simply ask you today to think about how God's blessed you and make sure that whatever you put down on that card, that it represents that. And you certainly want to be moving to a tithe. And you want to move beyond the tithe. You want to move to that point of just real generosity that you might truly honor God with what you give. And those who have ears to hear, let them hear. Amen.